Hi everyone, welcome to Training with Casey, where we explore animal training and living our best lives with animals. I'm Joseph Laughlin, producer of this podcast, and now, here's your host, Casey Covert. Let's get started.
A new one. Hey, thanks for that introduction, Joseph. I've been wanting to talk about training safety. Is that of any interest to you?
Yes, I think that's definitely important, and we definitely need to cover that. And you are very welcome for that introduction, by the way.
Thank you. I gave you a list of 8 things that are important for maintaining safety with animals. Do you want to lead us through them? And we can say just a minute about each one, and then people can look forward to seeing these in our podcast. Okay, so what were the things on our list? I bet some of them will surprise people.
Lack of respect.
Lack of respect. Okay, so shall we talk about it for just a minute?
Yes, let's do that.
So what I find with animals over and over again is that people tend to treat them as if they're not intelligent. They're not capable of making decisions. They may ignore some concern that the animal's trying to bring to them. And one example that comes to mind is a client that had a Mustang horse. And every time she tried to lead him forward, he would rear up towards her. This had been going on for 10 years. It was very dangerous. In our system, she learned to explain things to him. And within 2 weeks, that problem was solved and it has never returned. The horse has totally changed. So giving the animal information, listening to what they say, but we'll talk about it more in the podcast. And I probably can get some video of that horse to show everybody. What's next?
The next one is failure to ask for permission.
Oh, doesn't that sound weird?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen anybody ask an animal for permission before they do anything?
I would say the only person that comes to mind is you, our host.
Guilty as charged. Well, if you just walk up and touch a horse on the face, many times they'll recoil away from you. If you simply ask them, may I touch your face? They will often stand quietly for you. But there's more to it than that. There's a whole little set of, there's like a protocol for how to do this and how the horse answers you or any animal answers you and says, yes, you have permission. And by asking permission, we get animals to agree to do painful, scary things without using any anesthesia, no coercion, and where every other tool that they had to work with failed them. So, of course, one that comes to mind is Jordy the rhino. And another one that comes to mind is the stray cat that had to have full body x-rays. And we were able to do that without anesthesia or anything in 13 minutes. What's the next one?
The next one is uncertainty.
Ooh, now that's another thing. Doesn't that sound weird?
Mm-hmm.
So why is it so dangerous? What happens when you don't know what's going to happen next?
That's a good question. I'm uncertain about it.
Yes, you are. Okay, so let's take one example. You live in Southern California, right?
Correct.
So you and I are going to go down to LA.
Oh, yay.
I knew you'd say that.
I hate that traffic.
And we get there, and all of a sudden you hear gunshots. And you look over at me, and I don't want you to be frightened, right? So I look confident and happy. Okay.
Why do you look confident and happy over there? You should be scared.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what is she smoking? Oh, yeah, it's California. Now, what if instead of just looking confident, I said, Joseph, we're right next to the police range right there. And that's why you hear gunshot. How would you feel now?
Bit better than now that you
just be ready. You look like you were smoking. Okay. So here's an even better option. Before we even go downtown, I say, Joseph, we're headed toward the police firing range, that area. So if you hear any gunshots, that's probably what it is. But just in case, keep an eye on me. If you see me drop to the ground, try to beat me there. Now we go to the police range. You hear the gunshots going off. How do you feel?
Better now that you've explained it.
Ahead of time, right? I prepared you for what was coming. I relieved you of unnecessary uncertainty. Uncertainty is one of the most uncomfortable emotions after fear and pain. Nobody likes uncertainty. Okay, what comes after uncertainty?
Perceptual confusion.
Have you ever seen this? Can you identify places where you've seen this? Okay, I don't want to make you suffer. Horses going in and out of different lighting intensity. So when they go out of a barn or into a barn, out of the forest, into the sunlight, or the other direction.
Okay.
Often balk. And you don't have to try to drag them in. When they balk, they're just asking you, can you give me just a minute? My eyes need to adjust. So that's what we do. Now, where would you expect to see that with marine mammals?
Dolphins.
When? When you think dolphins are okay hearing underwater?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know that they're okay hearing in the air?
Yes.
It's at the air-water interface that they often cannot perceive sound efficiently. Let's say maybe water is draining out of the sea lion ears. A dolphin, of course, that's not exactly the same thing. But their eyes are going to see differently underwater versus in the air. Underwater, they have full control of their swimming, but in the air, they don't. Whatever. Right. Behavior they're going to do in the air, they have to come up with the whole thing planned out and committed. Like the dolphin can't jump 2 feet up in the air and go, oh yeah, I think I'll do a high jump now. He does a high jump by swimming down deeply enough that he can get the run to jump high enough. It takes a lot of planning and knowledge and skill. Okay, so that's where perceptual confusion comes in. And we'll talk about that. I think this whole situation with the fair has something to do with that. All right, what's the next one?
Drifting out of the present.
Ooh, this is really important. And this is one that's extremely important with horses. I'm not sure if I see it as much with any other animal, but probably with other hoof stock. Okay, so a lot of horses, when they go to start working, will kind of just zone out. They'll just start walking along, and you can see they'll get a really blank look on their face, and they are not present. And that is extremely dangerous, because what will happen is they'll go along like this, barely conscious, until something startles them into the here and now. And when they explode into the here and now, they are very likely to buck or bolt or roll over or do something else that's dangerous. So we have a very simple technique for preventing that needless danger. To put it in perspective, in 4 hours of time, we can get horses so that they're fine with waving tarps, umbrellas, rolling luggage, kids on bikes, all kinds of things. We can do all that in about 4 hours. Okay, what do we have next?
Next up is timing.
Okay. Have you heard me talk about lub-dub timing before?
I can't remember if I have or not.
Okay. So we can talk about that in this podcast. But there is a certain amount of time that a nerve cell needs to recover from being activated. And there's a certain amount, there's an amount of time that it takes an animal to resolve a perception. So let's say that the animal hears something that worries it, a slamming car door, for example, or a barking dog would be that for a lot of exotic animals. A lot of exotic animals that have never seen a dog will panic when they hear a barking dog or see a dog a block away. So if we want to help them by counterbalancing that trigger, that stimulus in the environment, we need to understand that timing and how to work with the animal. So a place where this often goes wrong with dogs is with the veterinarian or at confirmation shows. So with the, I'll take confirmation shows first. Somebody is going to stack their dog up. They'll put their hand under the dog's chin. They'll stretch his little tail out and they try to get him to stand just right over his feet so he looks his very best. And they're not confident that their dog will hold his best pose for this judge. So they hold on to the dog until the judge comes in and actually takes the dog from them, at which point they'll let go of it and the dog will turn around and try to bite the judge. So the only thing that we had to do to fix that problem, the only thing that we needed to do to prevent the judge from getting nipped by the dog was to change the timing of when the handler left the dog. We corrected so many show dogs in a short amount of time. Very interesting. Now, what's the next one? Because I think it's a big one.
The next one is going to be intervening.
Woo. So, Joseph, one time I mentioned to you that there are two main ways that trainers get injured or killed when working with animals. Did I ever tell you what those two ways were?
I don't think so. What are they?
I don't think so either. Intervening is one. When two animals get upset at one another or get just emotional, could be romance, it could be aggression. When two animals are working out their community problems, and a trainer gets in the middle of it, that is dangerous. Very, very dangerous. I know of a number of elephant trainers that have died because of this or have been injured. That's a big one. So we'll talk about how to teach yourself to avoid being in that situation. Now, what was the other leading cause of injury and death?
Leaving
the animal. Now, didn't you have some kind of an uncomfortable situation with a sweet little animal recently?
I wouldn't say uncomfortable, but I would say the animal did squeal when I stepped out of the enclosure to grab one of my tools.
So how did you read that squeal? What was that animal expressing?
That he didn't want me to leave.
Frustration? What would, do you think it was frustration or fear or anger or what else could it be? What did you think it was?
Sadness, maybe, that I was stepping out.
So you think he loved you and not that he was pissed because you were taking his food with you?
Correct.
Okay. So I hope you're right. But a lot of times they're upset because you're taking their food and leaving. And we try to have all good things come from us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then when we leave, there can be an issue. And there's a very easy way to solve or prevent that particular problem. Now, we have two other safety-related topics.
I was about to say that. We have two more that we need to cover. Okay. So wouldn't that make it 9?
We'll count them later. Okay, guys, count them for us and put them in the comments.
Yes, count them for us, please.
Apparently, Joseph and I can't count. All right, so I have that it would make it 10.
Oh, 10, apparently, yeah.
All right, so what's number 9?
Okay, we really can't count.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I think I counted right from the start.
Yeah,
the
you counted,
college
I didn't.
Student is the one. Okay, go ahead. What's number 9?
Number 9 is going to be zoonotics.
Yeah. I just heard a very interesting thing from Dr. Fauci, and I never thought about it before. He said that most pandemics are zoonotic diseases.
Really?
Yes. Do you know what percentage he listed?
Uh-uh.
So just guess. Let's see what you think it would be.
95%.
Oh, you're much more attuned to that than I was. 70% was the number he gave.
I was two
really
numbers high. Off.
Yeah. Now, wait a minute. I think I'm sensing a trend here. Two numbers. If there's a chance to have 10, yeah, all right. Anyway. Zoonotic diseases include all the tick-borne diseases, which are really important for us to know about. Also, how about rabies, lysovirus, leptospirosis, listeriosis, herpes simiae, bird flu, swine flu, monkeypox, Ebola virus, bubonic plague. Shall I go on?
We could go on.
Yeah, we will go on. We're going to do a whole series on zoonotics because this is a subject that I've found difficult to research, even with Google. And especially because if you start to get sick from a zoonotic disease, you may need to act on it right away. Do you remember how long it may take seal finger to go from, you first start showing clinical symptoms to dying?
No, I don't remember.
3 days.
Ouch.
Yeah. If you don't start getting your antibiotics right away, you might be 3 days from death. And
oh,
I
no,
guarantee you that in most parts of the world, if you went in to and you had seal finger, I don't think most of the doctors are going to, you know, suspect it. So you need to know about it yourself.
Yes.
Hey, what's our big number 10?
Yes, number 10, if we can all count here.
And what was it?
Number 10 is evacuation.
Oh, right. Boy, this is increasingly important these days, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I have a colleague that had to evacuate 3 times 2 years ago because of fires. She
Ouch.
Had 15 dogs, and she had to evacuate them all. And then I have another colleague who had to evacuate for 9/11 with the World Trade Center. So
I'm interested in both of these cases.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do our next podcast on evacuations.
Definitely.
See you there?
Yes.
All right. Hope you can count to get there.
I know, right?
See you next.
I'll start counting.
Hey fans, are you enjoying Training with Casey? Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Casey Covert on YouTube. That is youtube.com/C/Casey Cover. Also, give the podcast a like, share, and comment.
Thanks for joining us. Come back for more news and views on animal training and living with animals. Stay at the top of the pack with Casey. This is Joseph Laughlin, producer of Training with Casey. See you next time.